don't stop photographing. But really, the important thing is to not stop looking and to not stop being curious about the world around you. If you stop being curious about the world around you, then what stories do you actually have to share with people?
That was the voice of Liz Martin, Cedar Rapids Gazette's senior visual journalist. Hi, my name is Sylvia Club, and welcome to The Source, Quill and Scroll's podcast. Liz joins me today on The Source. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Liz, can you tell me how your interest in photography as a high school journalist in Texas translated to a career as a senior visual journalist in Cedar Rapids, Iowa?
Yeah, so I started, like you said, I started as a sophomore in high school, and I very quickly fell in love with just being able to pop in and out of so many different places that I wouldn't normally get to see. You know, as a photographer, you're kind of invited everywhere. And so I jumped in and I joined the yearbook and newspaper staff. And then I was photo editor of my high school yearbook while also working as an intern at the local paper. And so from there, I attended the University of Missouri after some mentorship from the photographers at the local paper, and had a series of internships at newspapers, you know, during and after school. And then I landed back at the Cedar Rapids Gazette, which was actually one of my first internships that I had. So, you know, if you're looking to get started in photography, aside from the start you already have at high school, you know, doing internships is really going to be the best way to get your foot in the door. So I've been at the Gazette since 2007, although I was here previously as an intern in 2006.
And you were also a part of the news team that received the SPJ Sigma Delta Chi Deadline Reporting Award for coverage of the historic flood in Cedar Rapids in 2008 that submerged 15% of the city and displaced nearly 10,000 residents. What was it like covering such a major event?
You know, I was so new to the Gazette at that time that I think I kind of just acted on instinct and maybe also on adrenaline. I think I would cover it completely differently now. But back then, I had only been in Cedar Rapids for 6 months. So I was really learning the city as I went. I was learning neighborhoods as I went. I was learning about businesses as I went. And I was even, like, you know, learning about and photographing our local civic leaders as I went too. Like, I probably couldn't have picked the mayor out of a lineup before the flood. So I learned a lot about just how to stay safe, for one thing, you know, 1 foot in front of the other. But if you're in floodwater, make sure it's not too deep. I learned a lot about connecting with people on that personal level. Like, I was literally right there in the floodwater with them, although my home wasn't damaged. Just showing empathy, I think, was something that you really, that really is going to help when you're trying to cover a, you know, a major event like that. So now, you know, 13 years later, I just covered the major windstorm that moved through Cedar Rapids. And it was a completely different experience because this time I know the city. This time I was impacted directly, actually. And I had a little better sense of what the important things were to cover, right? So with the flood, I was kind of photographing everything that I could see. And sometimes it was too much. This time I was able to focus on what I knew, and what I knew was going to be important. And I think that's something that can really translate pretty well to high school journalists too, because you guys are directly plugged in so deeply into what's happening at your school. And so when a major news breaks that's, you know, related to your school or your district, you're in a great position to jump right in and start covering that without having to do things like what I did in the flood, which was, how do I get across a flooding river? Like, I had to figure that out kind of on the fly. And we didn't have iPhones back then. So I was doing all this on paper. So, you know, high school journalists are positioned pretty well to cover breaking news in your own backyard.
Right. And, you know, you have been a judge for Quill and Scroll for a few years now, judging the student life photography category in the Yearbook Excellence Contest, as well as the news feature photography category in the photo illustration. But focusing directly on news feature photography, as we're talking about major city events, how can students approach such a major event, whether within the walls of their school or their community, from a photojournalist standpoint?
So, like I said before, you know, you're uniquely positioned to know what's important to your fellow students already, right? You guys have, like high school journalists have insight into what's important to their classmates in a way that like I as a professional don't. So really what I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about, you know, covering high school events is who is impacted by this and how can I tell that story? And how can I tell that story in a way that maybe people outside of that social circle will still connect? So you're looking at like, what is the storytelling action that's taking place? Is there like, is there a meeting that's happening? Meetings aren't that exciting, but sometimes you get some pretty emotional pleas from students or from parents, and those can become pretty storytelling. But also think about like who would be impacted by actions at the school board, for instance, and like, can you photograph them in their daily lives? Things like that are going to be what really elevate photos beyond like standard event coverage.
In terms of last year's news feature photography winners, what did you see in their work that really exemplified the highest values of student journalism?
Really what I'm looking for when I'm judging a contest is photos that first and foremost I emotionally connect with. So I'm looking for photos that I have a response to, whether that's like surprise or joy or even sadness, like what emotion am I feeling from viewing this photograph? And then what story is this photograph telling? So there are a lot of great photos that come out of like pep rallies, for instance, but photos that come out of say a walkout are gonna have much more news value, and being able to find like a real emotion and moment within that I think is especially important as a photojournalist. Looking back at some of the things that I awarded within the feature category last year, those definitely all fit with what I just said about a photo that I have like an emotional reaction to. Like, do I want to know more about this student or this event after seeing this photograph? And the photo that I chose for first place actually like raises more questions than answers. So I know very quickly what I'm seeing. There's a lot of context provided. It's a girl looking in a mirror, putting on this crazy lizard makeup, and I can see her hand. It's out of focus, so the aperture that was chosen was pretty ideal. I can see her hand kind of applying that makeup, and I can see makeup in the corner. So I can see all the work that's gone into creating this look. And so that's the photo that I chose for first place, not just because it surprised me or delighted me, but because technically it was also very strong. You had strong leading lines, you had really excellent light, and the composition was spot on by using rule of thirds. And, like I said about sometimes meetings can turn out to be pretty storytelling. One of our other winning images was from a really challenging situation, which was, it was a school board meeting, I believe. And you have a girls basketball player who's pleading with the parents to like hear her argument. And that's a really tough situation to be in because these people are sometimes your friends, and it can be hard to photograph your friends in an emotionally vulnerable position. But this photo really did immediately help me connect with the story of what was happening at this school. The parents are reacting in an interesting way. They're clearly listening to what she has to say. And that to me was one of the strongest images of the bunch, just because it really helped me connect with a really tough situation.
In switching gears, maybe in contrast to the emotions that are elicited from the news feature photography categories and relying on the technical skill of the raw photo itself, you also judged our photo illustration category. And you know, there's sometimes a lot of confusion surrounding that category. What it means, what it consists of. Can you explain to our listeners what is photo illustration?
Yeah, so not every story can always be photographed in a literal way. You know, like I said, we're always looking for who's impacted or what's an action that's currently happening that's related to the story. Sometimes these are really hard to find. Stories about infrastructure, for instance, are a really good opportunity for an illustration instead, because what are you going to shoot? Like an empty field sometimes. So photo illustration, as you guys have it defined for the Quill and Scroll contest, and this is a really good, concise summary of what it is a single photo that's been altered or manipulated for storytelling of general topics or sports. And so what I'm looking for is design trends, visual communication, creativity, appropriateness, composition, and interest. So this is honestly something that I have a really hard time with because I'm a pretty literal thinker as a journalist. But this is a really good way of approaching big topics that, you know, you really don't have another way to directly photograph. One of the most successful entries from last year in the photo illustration category tackled climate change. And there was actually a series of illustrations, but the cover image was a melting ice cream cone. And the ice cream was green and blue. And there were these tiny figures perched in the ice cream cone as it was melting. And without even seeing the headline, I knew exactly what the photographer was trying to convey and what I would be reading about, which was, this is going to be a piece about climate change. Now that's really just the general idea, right? I need to read the story to find out the rest. But it definitely piqued my interest and had me wanting to, you know, to understand more. Another illustration in that category that I thought was really effective is they utilized a kernel of truth and built an illustration around that. So they actually, the student gathered food that had been thrown out in the cafeteria and they arranged that all together. And then they built an illustration around it using graphics. And also they wrote in some smeared ketchup. And I thought that was just such a good way of bringing reality into the photograph while still creating a photo that maybe shows the scale of something that would be really hard to capture otherwise.
But Liz, I want to turn more to the team environment of working as a photojournalist. Obviously, photos are often used to coincide with written work or to enhance written work to have more meaning. How can you prioritize working on a team to take the best possible photos and produce the best possible work?
Yeah, I think it's really important to always remember that you're not working in a vacuum. You are surrounded by people who have different life experiences from you. And, you know, whether you're the photographer or someone else is going to be, throwing those ideas around in that team environment can really result in much better visual storytelling or written storytelling. At the Gazette, we have regular brainstorming meetings. So we're not even necessarily planning specific stories. We're just throwing around ideas. And this gives us an opportunity to talk through these ideas with other people who, again, might have different perspectives and see what we can come up with. You know, we have a photo staff of 4 people at the Gazette, and we all have very different ways of approaching different stories and different photographs. So it can be really beneficial just to throw ideas around with them before I go into a particular type of event, even if it's just a sporting event, hearing how they've approached it, or maybe what their insights are into particular student athletes is really, really helpful. And that team environment has also been really, it's been challenging, but it's been really helpful as we've all shifted to working from home during the pandemic. You know, we always have an ongoing chat channel going where we can send each other photos, even if it's just a funny photo, or if it's a photo that we want feedback on, you know, we'll send those to each other and ask for help, or we'll just start, you know, talking about a particular story that we're working on. Or, you know, as the team lead, I'm usually the one who's like planning out what we're going to photograph. So, you know, we can also just open that up for discussion. Like, here, we have a story coming up on, you know, X. How can we approach this? Like, do you guys know anyone, or, you know, what are your thoughts? So that's kind of how we've approached it. And we also utilize Zoom a lot for photo editing. We work independently quite a lot, but if it's like a bigger story and we're kind of stuck on which photo is the best or how to sequence things for the online presentation, then we'll just share a Dropbox folder, hop on Zoom and like share our screens and just like talk about photography. So even if you're not physically with your other, you know, yearbook and newspaper staffs, you can still have this kind of like virtual collaboration.
Right. And that's so applicable to a lot of our students across the country and world that are not attending school in person. They're in a virtual environment and have to find those different outlets to be creative. But I want to turn our attention to professional photojournalism. Where should students be looking to view photojournalism that exemplifies the values that you've put forth?
Yeah, students today are in such an exciting position because there is just so much great photography being produced right now, just everywhere. Obviously, Instagram is a really great place to start because you can follow, you know, literally everyone from like National Geographic level photographers down to the photographers for your local newspaper. And I really think that starting with your local newspaper is a really, really good place to start because you're going to see how they're telling stories of your community. And they're also part of this community of photojournalists who are always sharing each other's work that we find inspiring or challenging or exciting. And so I really encourage students to start with your local photojournalists at the newspaper, if you're still lucky enough to have them, and then build from there. You know, the legacy publications like the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, all the big metros have really, really talented, passionate photojournalism staffs. And so seeking out those accounts and following all of those will really start to kind of create this steady diet of excellent photojournalism. And one of my other favorite places to go, I'm not sure if it's open right now, but Half Price Books often has a really, really excellent photo book selection. So whether you're getting photojournalism books, you know, getting the classics like The Americans by Robert Frank, or if you're getting more artistic photography books, like all of that you can get for such a great price. And it's a really good way to build your collection and to start expanding your visual literacy.
Right. And I do think Half Price Books actually has a website. So that would be a great tip to look for, maybe ask for a holiday present. But, you know, turning to pursue journalism as a career, obviously looking at those photography greats throughout history that have made long lasting photos that stick in our minds and live in our history books. How should students approach and prepare for a career in photojournalism?
The number one thing is to not put your camera down. Well, okay, I'll give some caveats there. Don't stop photographing, but really the important thing is to not stop looking and to not stop being curious about the world around you. If you stop being curious about the world around you, then what stories do you actually have to share with people? And I know that that's a very broad, vague answer. That's really just step one, right? Is don't stop looking. And that's looking at light and watching for moments and also looking for stories that have gone untold. And don't stop photographing. Keep, you know, everyone has a camera in their pocket now through their phone. I don't even travel with a real camera. I travel with my phone now. I think it's great. It's very creatively freeing. But from there, you really do need to like seek out mentors. Seek out, like I said, the photographers at your local paper, because they probably have great advice to give, even if it's a little bit of a challenging time for us to do like job shadows. I love talking to high school journalists on the sidelines because like I was that photographer way back then. And, you know, I'm so grateful to the people who took me under their wing when I was 16, because I wouldn't be where I am today without that. I also think it's really important for journalists to be very well-rounded. If you just live and breathe photography, then you're not going to have like the broader worldview that you need to be that curious, exceptional journalist. And I use the word journalist intentionally because you're not just a photographer, you are a journalist when you're a photojournalist.
Do you have any final advice for students listening?
Yeah, I think students today are in a really unique position of being able to capture this exceptional moment in history. This is a really, really challenging time for a lot of people, you know, students included, probably their parents and their teachers. And the yearbooks and the newspapers that are being created today, those are historic documents. And I know that it's scary and stressful and frustrating, but really think of yourselves as the paper of record right now. And what can you be doing to document this very strange, bizarre moment in time so that 30, 40, 100 years from now, someone unearths that yearbook, and that yearbook really is a document of what it was like to go to high school during a pandemic. This is crazy. It's really, really crazy. But I think that if we take that responsibility seriously, that your work can really be impactful, can impact your fellow students right now, but it can also be a really important document for the future.
That's all the time we have for today on The Source. Thanks so much for joining me, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time, I'm Sylvia Club, signing off.